Dragnet.
The Jack Benny Program.
I'm that man. Matt Dillon, United States Marshal.
George Burns and Gracie Allen.
Good evening, friends of the Inner Sanctum.
We offer you Escape.
Our Miss Brooks. Suspense.
Richard Diamond, Private Detective.
Fibber McGee and Molly.
The Great Gildersleeve.
Yeah. Radio Theater.
In the air.
Dedicated to man's imagination, the theater of the mind.
You know what our call letters WGN stand for, don't you?
WGN Radio Theater.
The special three-hour presentation.
With Carl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
All right, about 8 minutes after 11 p.m. here on this legendary radio station, 720 WGN, broadcasting across the nation. It is March 25th, and this is program 165 in the series. I'm your host, Carl Amari. To my right, the vivacious Lisa Wolf. What's up, Lisa?
Hi, Carl.
In the booth, we have Shantae Garth. She's our producer. She's the best in the business, and we have some classic radio shows for you tonight. We have Escape. You won't want to miss that. John Daner stars. Then it's the Jack Benny Program, and Jack's special guest is Groucho Marx. And then Murder at Midnight, a show from 1947. Three great radio shows, all brought to you in part by Cat's Pride.
It's time for Celebrity Scoop, brought to you by Cat's Pride. Meow.
This actress stars in the upcoming thriller Red Sparrow, about a Russian spy who considers becoming a double agent.
What do they win?
And the winner gets two tickets to see the Apollo Chorus. They're going to be in Chicago for 2 days here, Friday, May 5th and Sunday, May 7th.
What do they win?
Two tickets to see the Apollo Chorus in Chicago.
Okay.
That is the legendary Apollo Chorus.
All right.
Spring concert.
312-981-7200. That's our number to call. Here's a hint. This actress played Rosalind Rosenfeld in American Hustle.
Karma, the one that Karma gave me. Karma, Karma.
Why don't you just marry Carmine? Get a little gold microwave and put it on a chain around your neck. You want to be more like Carmine? Why don't you build something like he does instead of all your empty deals?
I love her voice.
She's one of my favorite actresses.
I was going to say, you like her, Carl?
Yes, I do. 312-981-7200 is our number. Give us a call. Win some tickets. We'll be right back.
Welcome back. This is the WGN Radio Theater. We're playing Celebrity Scoop. Let's play it one more time.
Well, with the one that Carmine gave me. Carmine, Carmine.
Why don't you just marry Carmine? Get a little gold microwave and put it on a chain around your neck. You want to be more like Carmine? Why don't you build something like he does instead of all your empty deals?
Oh, we're
That's
laughing.
How Lisa talks to me during the week. You should hear when she calls me. She
you
talks
know,
like that.
If I could talk, if I could talk like she talks, I would be
You're making
famous.
Millions of dollars.
I would be famous. Hey, Dave, how are you?
Good. How are you?
Great. It's good to hear from you. Who is
Carmine? Carmine? Carmine?
Who is that attractive actress? Carl's glowing over here.
Jennifer Lawrence.
Jennifer Lawrence is exactly right. Dave, you are a winner. We're so thrilled to give you a pair of tickets. See the legendary Apollo Chorus. This is their anticipated spring concert, American Masters, featuring the work of Emmy-winning music composer Jeff Beal. So they are here in Chicago, Friday, May 5th and Sunday, May 7th. And people can get tickets and information at apollochorus.org. Of course, you have two tickets. So congratulations and thank you so much for calling in and listening to us.
Excellent. Love the show.
Thanks, you. Take
Dave.
Care.
Appreciate you.
Thank you.
All right. It is time for our first classic radio show. It's radio's greatest series of high adventure and mystery, Escape. The series came to radio in 1947, lasted seven seasons, and the voices of Escape were William Conrad and Paul Frees. They also appeared in the shows oftentimes, too. It was really a cousin to Suspense, but didn't have the star power or budget that Suspense did because it had very few sponsors throughout the run. It used radio's best supporting players, people like Harry Bartell, Joseph Kearns, Ben Wright, and John Daner. And you remember the byline for this, Lisa? Tired of the everyday grind, ever dream of a life of romantic adventure? Want to get away from it all?
Of course.
We offer you
Escape.
Escape. And that's what we have for you right now. This is called Habit. It's from July 18th, 1948. It stars John Daner. Here's part one of Escape.
Fed up with the everyday grind. Tired out from the summer heat. Want to get away from it all. we offer you Escape.
Escape, designed to free you from the four walls of today for a half hour of high adventure.
You are clinging precariously to a diving, pitching longboat, lashed by mountainous seas in the middle of a hurricane. And at the helm, driving you on, is a man bent on revenge and willing to kill for it.
Tonight, we escape to the open sea with an ancient tramp steamer and its fighting captain, as F.R. Buckley told it in his ironic story, Habit.
Very well. The court has no more questions. Step down, please.
Thank you, sir. Your Honor.
Well, Captain Weatherfield, you've just heard the complaining witness. Have you anything to say in your own defense?
Yeah. Hit the man about a bit. No doubt of that, Your Honor. In fact, with half chance, they'd have pounded his blasted head off.
Quiet! Quiet! We'll have order in the court. Then you admit the charges, Captain Weatherfield.
That I hit him? Yeah. But I had extenuating circumstances, Your Honor.
I see. And what were they?
He laughed at my ship. At the Wakelin, Your Honor. As fine a freighter as ever steamed out of here on the Liverpool run.
I don't quite see.
He stood there on the wharf. Squint-eyed son of a landlubbered lawyer. He said my ship looked like an old woman. With her dress on backwards. Her hair not combed. That's when I flattened him out.
Yes, and I still say that's what she looks like.
Order!
Why, you confounded little pipsqueak, I'll break your part.
Sit down, Captain Weatherfield.
I will not.
Grab him, bailiff.
Let go of me, confounded, let go of me. Let go of me, I say.
Order in the court. Captain Weatherfield. Captain Weatherfield, this court finds you guilty of assault and battery as charged. And sentences you to 7 days in the new Bristol City Jail. All right, bailiff. Lock him up.
And that's the way it started, with the captain getting 7 days in the new Bristol jail. Yeah, but it went a whole lot further before it was over. Yeah, it was like a bolt of chain lightning that may take a dozen strange turns or more before it finally strikes home. And, actually, of course, the Wakelin was a funny-looking old scow. She'd had 30 years on the North Atlantic with never a part being replaced so long as there was some way of patching it up. Yeah, she was a regular joke of a ship, that is, to everybody except Captain Weatherfield. Yeah, those of us who were officers aboard her had learned a long time before not to hint anything like that to him. No, she was the Queen Mary and the Normandy and his firstborn child, all rolled up into one. So you can bet your life we all kept sober faces when the captain finally came aboard at the end of the week.
Mr. Connolly?
Yes, sir.
Well, everything in order? Will we be able to sail in an hour?
Yes, sir. I've been keeping her ready for the last 4 days, just in case...
That will
might,
do. I'm fully aware that we're 4 days past schedule. And the reason for it will not be discussed on board. Is that clear?
Yes, Captain.
Been badly treated in this town, Mr. Connolly. Thrown behind bars like some thieving dock rat. I don't feel good about it. And if it takes me the rest of my life, I'm going to even up the score. You understand that?
I think so.
You think so, sir?
Yes, sir.
All right. Then button up your collar and go get up a head of steam.
So 3 days later, we were plowing through a heavy sea 580 miles out on the Atlantic. The spray was freezing in the rigging. We were flirting with the fringe of a northeast hurricane.
blast this double-blasted confounded wind. Mr. Connolly!
In here, Captain.
Well, how's she looking, Mr. Connolly?
Not so bad. We're taking the seas in our quarter, and so far we're making only about 4 inches of water an hour.
4 inches of water an hour, sir?
Yes, sir.
Good. Then we'll take a chance on it.
Take a chance on what, sir?
A distress message. Just picked it up at the wireless shack.
Oh.
Here, take a look.
Mm-hmm. The freighter Johannes out of New Bristol. Main shaft broken, auxiliaries out of commission, shipping water fast. Latitude 4630, longitude... let me see. Yeah, about 90 miles from us, Norbert West.
Yeah, that's right, Mr. Connolly. Lay out the course.
You what?
We should sight her sometime around dawn. If we hold her full speed all night.
Full speed? Dead into a hurricane? Why, the Wakeland would fall apart in 2 hours.
I doubt it. She's a good ship. Lay out the course.
Yeah, but the Johannes is right in the main shipping lane. Somebody else is bound to pick her up before morning anyway.
Mr. Connolly, we can hope not.
What do you mean, hope not?
Evidently, you didn't notice her registry, Mr. Connolly. She's out of New Bristol.
Oh, what of it?
That, as you may recall, is the town that threw me into jail. Gotten all the papers. Like as not, my daughters up in Maine have probably read about it by now. I'll not have them thinking their father's a man who does nothing but go around punching people in the noggin.
All right, but what's it got to do with this?
I'm going to be alongside the Johannes before anybody else is, Mr. Connolly. I'm going to rescue every man aboard her. Then I'm going to take them back to New Bristol and get a public apology out of that town. And I'll see that that gets in the papers, too.
I've never heard of anything so crazy.
I don't care
my...
what you've never heard of, Mr. Connolly. Lay out that course now before I get mad. Decide to punch somebody's blasted head off.
Well, the little cock of the walk made good the first part of his plan all right. In spite of a broken steam injector that had to be patched up with rigging wire, by shortly after dawn, he had us hove to, a half cable length off from the Johannes. She was down by the stern, listing badly, but still afloat. The wind was howling like a banshee, and the flying spume was freezing all over our decks. There was no doubt but what the next part of our job was going to be a lot tougher than the first part.
Mr. Connolly! We got a boat crew together.
Yes, sir. There'll be 5 seamen and a 3rd mate. I'll take charge myself.
Leave the 3rd mate aboard. I'll take charge myself. It's my show. I'm going to run it.
All right, Captain. Whatever you say.
Well, what's holding us up? Let's get this boat over the side.
Blocks are frozen, Captain. Carbon's trying to break it loose.
Well, he's not cracking walnuts at a tea party. Here, Chips, give me that mallet. Mr. Roberts.
Yes, sir.
You'll stay on board.
Yes, sir.
Keep an oil slick running. Waves out there. Pretty high.
Pretty high? I've never seen him any higher.
Well, I can't help it, Mr. Connolly. I've got to... There, did it. Boat crew ready.
Ready aboard, sir.
All right, then. Lower away.
For the 7 of us who went overside in the longboat, that command was the beginning of a nightmare. If things had been bad up on the Wakeland's deck, they were 100 times worse down there in the very midst of that smashing, that tumbling maelstrom of water and wind. A continuous driving spray was torn from the wave crests and froze solid on the gunwales and the boat seats and on our faces. One man bailed constantly while the others pulled away on the oars with bleeding hands. And even then, we were never far from foundering. Captain Weatherfield sat in the stern and shouted orders none of us could hear, but we could see his face, and that was enough to keep us at it. With a halo of sheet glass around his sou'wester and his gray beard turned to a frozen mass of jumbled icicles, he looked like Neptune come to life, or maybe even more like the devil himself. It took us over 2 hours before we finally hauled in against the rusty side of the battered old Johannes.
Ahoy the day!
Sea's too heavy.
Understood. Already here.
Wait till we come up by the swell. We'll hold as steady as we can. And by now. No, not yet.
Good Lord, he fell on the gun.
Blasted fool told him to wait.
He smashed in his chest. Why, it's the captain of the ship.
Then he had no business jumping fast anyhow. Haul him aboard, Mr. Connolly. Get him out of the way. All right. Ready on deck?
Aye, aye, sir.
All right, there. Steady. Now. Good. Stow that man aft there. On deck. Wait for the swell. Wait. Now. Get him, Connolly. A blast to sea. You on deck. Jump now. Wait. You better help him out there. Right. Here comes another. Catch him. Haul him in, Connolly. Good. Back horse, you. Stand by. Fall an aft side. Here comes another one. Hold her steady. Keep one oar against the side there. Anybody else up there, mister?
No, sir. Six of us. Others lost overboard last night.
All right, then. Back off the oars. You there, Polano. Get a hold of that oar.
He can't do it very well with... With only one arm, Captain.
What do you mean, one arm?
He broke his arm a couple of minutes ago when we bumped the side.
Then give him a bucket. At least he can bail. All right, let's go!
It was 6 hours before we finally got back aboard the Wakelin. But we did get back. And I doubt if any other man but Captain Weatherfield could have done it. True enough, he fainted across the engine room hatch once we were on board. But I don't forget, he was 72 years old. He'd taken a crew of six out in an open boat on the high seas in the middle of a hurricane, rescued six more men off a sinking ship, and brought the whole 12 back alive. Well, one of them, of course, was only barely alive, and that was Captain Miller of the Johannes. He was still unconscious. I had him put in a bunk and hoped for the best. And then I turned in to grab a few hours' sleep.
All right, that's the first portion of Escape with an episode called Habit from July 18th, 1948. We'll get back to it in just a few minutes here on the WGN Radio Theater.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
Thank you, David Jennings. Lisa Wolf, are you ready for the conclusion to Escape? Want to listen to it?
I'm ready and waiting, Carl.
All right,
Amari.
Let's go back to July 18th, 1948. This is called Habit. Here's the conclusion now to Escape.
I guess it was sometime after midnight when the third mate called me. I got dressed, went down, woke up the captain.
Confound it, Mr. Connolly. Can't a man even close his eyes aboard this ship without somebody rousing him out of his bunk?
I'm sorry, Captain. Thought you ought to know. Miller's conscious now and wants to see you. He thinks he's dying.
Dying, is it?
Yeah.
I'll see about that. Where's my pants?
Well, here you are, sir.
Thank you.
Yeah, might be a good thing if Miller did die, according to his first mate, Larson.
Huh?
Well, Larson says they had plenty of warning of this storm, but Miller drove straight on into it. He was racing for port.
Oh, racing for port.
Yeah.
Bad business.
There'll be an inquiry on it. He'll lose his ticket when they find out.
It's also bad business, Mr. Connolly, when first mates talk out of turn. Come on. Where is he?
I put him in the cabin off the wardroom. The third mate's in there with him now.
Mm-hmm. How is the ship heading?
Due south.
Due south?
Well, we're running before the wind. Can't do anything else.
I told you, Mr. Connolly, to lay a course for New Bristol.
I know, but we can't do it. The main boiler's out, and we're on the auxiliaries. It may take 2 days to fix it.
Ah, confound the luck. Risk my life to rescue a man. Tries to die on me. Now that bonehead engineer's let the main boiler break down.
That's not his fault. It should have been replaced 5 years ago.
5 years ago what, Mr. Connolly?
5 years ago, sir.
Good.
Well, here we are.
Oh, glad you got here, sir. I was getting worried.
Yeah, it's all right, Mr. Roberts. Here, stand back a bit and hold the light up.
Yes.
There, that's fine. Evening, Captain Miller.
Evening, Captain.
You're in some pain, I take it?
Yeah. Feels like something sharp. stick in my chest. Getting worse.
Hmm. Something sharp, eh?
Yeah.
No doubt the broken end of a rib poking into your lungs.
Yeah. Guess so.
Hey, feels like there's a rib gone.
Yeah. I want to make a statement for the log.
Oh, I do. Figure you're getting ready to die, is that it?
Yeah. Not much chance. Shouldn't I jump first?
No, you shouldn't have. Understand you was racing for pot. Drove straight into the storm.
Yeah. Had to. It's my wife. Her first baby. I wanted to be with her.
What's he saying, sir?
The wife's thinking of having a baby, Roberts.
Oh.
Statement. Responsibility.
We'll discuss that later, Captain. That lung gets a hole punched in it. You're done for.
He's practically done for now.
You know, Mr. Connolly, I saw a doctor open up a man once, take a broken rib out of him. Think I can remember fairly well how he went about it. And there ought to be some chloroform on board.
Captain Weathers...
You shut up, Mr. Connolly. Captain Miller, it's one chance in a million, but you've got no chance now. How about it?
Anything. Doesn't matter. Be an inquiry, boy. Better to die.
Well, we'll worry about that later. All right, then. Go find that chloroform, Mr. Roberts.
Yes, sir.
And bring me a bar of soap.
Yes.
And get a couple of them little knives, whatever they call them, out of the medicine locker.
Yes, sir, right away.
Mr. Connolly, go wake up that first mate of his. Get him in here. We'll need a witness to Captain Miller's consent.
All right, sir.
And Mr. Connolly.
Yes, sir.
Find Chips and Boris' chest of tools. Never can tell what you'll find when you start to open a man up.
In 10 minutes, we had everything ready. Larson signed a statement swearing that Captain Miller had agreed to it. And the third mate, with his face white as a sheet, stood at the head of the bunk, dripping chloroform under a towel and holding it over Miller's nose and mouth. I held the light in one hand and kept the other on the patient's pulse while Captain Weatherfield rolled up his sleeves and started in on a major operation that he thought he'd seen some doctor perform once.
Everything snug and proper. How's he seem to be getting along, Mr. Connolly?
No, he's still breathing.
I know he's breathing, man. It's his chest I'm operating on. How's his pulse?
Pretty weak. No worse than it was.
Keep that chloroform dripping, Mr. Roberts.
Yes, sir.
Well, there's no time like the present.
Oh!
Hold that light steady, Mr. Connolly.
Yes, sir.
Steady yourself. Now, let me see. I think that doctor did it like this.
I've used up half the chloroform, Captain.
Keep it dripping, Roberts. Well now. Don't remember anything like that being in there. Let's see now.
Pulse is getting pretty weak.
Mr. Connolly, don't bother me. Got more important things here to think about. That's it. Here's the end of the rib, all right. Now, if I can just... That's all right, let it go. Don't need the knife anymore. Confound it, Connolly. Give me a little more room to work here. Cabin's small enough stairs.
Captain, his pulse has stopped.
No, it hasn't, Mr. Connolly. Now, why the devil doesn't that rib come loose when I...
It's no use, Captain. He's dead. His heart stopped beating.
Mr. Connolly, don't stand there. Try to tell me his heart stopped when I can see it beating right now. Mr. Larson.
Yes, sir.
Would you look at that tool chest behind you? See if you can find me a pair of pliers.
I doubt if there's ever been another operation like it before or since. By all rights, Captain Miller should have died 10 times over, right there on the bunk. Only he didn't. He was unconscious for 48 hours. But on the fifth day, he was sitting up on a deck chair and cussing, because somebody had slung his broken rib overboard instead of saving it so he could whittle out a letter opener. We were driven 600 miles to the south before the storm blew itself out, and we got the main boiler back into operation and could lay a course for New Bristol. And 3 days away from port, Captain Weatherfield called all of us officers of the Wakeland together in the chart room, along with First Mate Larson of the Johannes.
Gentlemen, there may be some questions in your minds in regard to what this meeting is all about. No doubt you're wondering, even if you aren't asking. Am I right?
Well, yes, sir. We have been trying to guess.
Then I'll tell you, gentlemen. I called this meeting to put a stop to certain idle rumors, which I hear have been floating around.
Just what kind of rumors, Captain Weatherfield?
Them which says that Captain Miller of late ship Johannes deliberately drove head-on into a storm while racing to make port.
There's no rumor about that. It's what he was doing. As his first mate, I should know.
And I say he wasn't, Mr. Larson. The way I figure it, got caught by the storm without any warning. He gave orders for full speed to try to beat out of it. A couple of hours later, main shaft broke, left him helpless without steerage way. Could happen to anybody.
Maybe. Only it didn't. I was there, Captain Weatherfield. I know what happened. And there's five of my crew left to back me up.
They'll back up anything you say, Mr. Larson. You know that.
Then there's nothing to talk about. When the Board of Inquiry gets through with Miller, he won't command another ship as long as he lives.
So, there's not going to be any Board of Inquiry.
Huh? Maybe that's not up to you.
Which is what we're here to decide.
I don't get it, Captain. Miller's a rat. He was the first one to jump when we come alongside. Anything that happens to him serves him right. Now, why should you stick up for him?
My personal opinion of the man has nothing to do with this, Mr. Connolly. I say there'll be no Board of Inquiry because it suits my purposes that there be none.
And just what are your purposes, Captain?
I drove my ship 90 miles off her course in a hurricane, risked my life in an open boat, just for one reason, Mr. Larson. Because I knew you were registered out of New Bristol.
Ah, so that's it.
Aye, Mr. Connolly, that's it. I operated on a man, saved his life just so he could stand up alongside of me, have our pictures taken for the newspapers.
I get it. So, you don't want some messy Board of Inquiry throwing scandal in the story of your noble rescue on the high sea, eh? You want to be a blasted hero.
Mr. Larson, being a hero has got nothing to do with it. But I am planning to get a public apology out of the town of New Bristol. And you, or nobody else, is going to do anything to stop me.
Yeah, well, it's too bad you haven't got the whole say about it, Captain.
And it's too bad you're so bullheaded, set on swearing away your captain's ticket, that you force me to teach you a lesson.
And just how are you aiming to do that?
By knocking a little sense into your thick noggin, something like this.
So it's a fight you're after, all right? Come on, Captain. Teach me a lesson.
All right. Show him the one you learned in Shanghai.
I'll teach you all right.
You got it, Captain.
Get up, Mr. Larson.
I'll get up. All right.
He's got a pair of dividers.
So you tried to stab me, would you? Well, Larson, what about it?
All right. All right, I'm through.
There going to be a Board of Inquiry?
No. I'll back up anything you say.
Good. What about the rest of you? Anything I say go?
Yes, sir.
All right, then. Get back on watch. What do you think this is, a peaceful harbor of a Sunday?
It was a clear, sunshiny day when we steamed into New Bristol Harbor and dropped anchor at the mouth of the river. Captain Weatherfield sent Miller on ashore at quarantine, insisting that his reason was not just to make sure of having a reception ready. Nonetheless, he spent an hour and a half shaving, trimming his hair, and dressing up in his best shore-going clothes. But he had a right to strut a little at that. He'd moved through a whole series of tough jobs, every one against almost impossible odds, and he'd come out on top. And all because he wanted his daughters up in Maine to know he could do something once in a while besides punch people in the noggin.
Hey,
It was mid-afternoon by the time we finally rowed ashore in the longboat, and a good-sized crowd had assembled on the wharf. And when we got in close, we could see Captain Miller waiting by the landing along with a regular reception committee, all dressed up in striped pants and top hats like a bunch of foreign diplomats. And the head man of the whole layout was the same judge who'd given the captain 7 days in jail.
Easy now, Mr. Connolly.
Here. I'll hold this steady, sir.
Thank you.
Here we are now. Okay. All right, easy now.
Yeah.
Come on.
Yeah, there we go.
Well, well, welcome, Captain Weatherfield, on behalf of the town of New Bristol.
Well, now, it's mighty nice of you, Judge.
Not at all, Captain. We're the ones who are honored. The whole town. And we want you to know it.
Well, thank you, Judge.
Captain Miller here has given us the complete story. The rescue at sea, the daring operation that saved his life.
Here. How are you feeling, Captain Miller?
A little tired right now, Captain. Been pretty busy. Arranging things, you know?
Of course.
You're a hero in this town, Captain Weatherfield. There's nothing too good for you. We're proud of you.
I was wondering if you'd recall a little incident where we met before, Judge, not so long ago.
A terrible mistake. I'll never forgive myself. I feel I owe you a public apology, Captain Weatherfield.
Well, now, don't believe I know just what to say, Judge.
Nothing at all to say, Captain Weatherfield. As I said before, we're the ones who are honored. The whole town of New Bristol. And all of New England, too, by Jove. Once those reporters get their stories on the wire.
Reporters, eh? Well, now, that's going to too much trouble, Judge.
Oh, not at all, Captain, not at all. They'll be wanting an interview with you, you know. We've had quite a time keeping them off this long. You're a hero, man, don't you realize that?
I only did my duty, Judge.
The New Bristol needs more men who only do their duty, Captain Weatherfield.
Mighty nice of you to say so.
When I recall the way you were treated here a few weeks ago, Captain, well, all I can do is to ask your forgiveness publicly.
I suspect that might be arranged, Judge. I'm not a man bear grudge.
A fact which your actions have proven, sir.
Them there fellows with the cameras. The reporters, well, are they?
Oh, yes. Yes, indeed, Captain. Well, of course, they're photographers, really.
They're taking them pictures to print in the newspapers, are they?
That's right, Captain. They'll be seen by people all over the country.
I suppose we might walk over that way?
Certainly, Captain Weatherfield. Certainly, anything you like. Won't you join us, Captain Miller?
Thanks, gentlemen. You know, I was just thinking, if they print a picture of that ship out there, nobody will believe the story.
What did you say, Captain Miller?
I said they wouldn't believe it. To look at that old mud sky, you wouldn't think she could float in a calm sea, much less...
Good heavens, he struck the man.
I'll teach you to call my ship a mud scow. Squint-eyed son of a five-legged salamander.
Stop, I say. Stop. Stop it. Constable. Constable. Arrest that man and look him up. I'm filing a charge of assault and battery.
Escape, produced and directed by Norman McDonald, tonight brought you Habit by F.R. Buckley, adapted for radio by Les Crutchfield, with editorial supervision by John Dunkel. Featured in tonight's cast were John Daner as Mr. McConley and Louis Van Ruten as Captain Weatherfield, with Wilms Herbert as Captain Miller, Barry Kroger as the judge, and Bill Boucher as First Mate Larson. Special music by Ivan Dittmars. Good night, then, until this same time next week, when once again we offer you Escape. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
All right, that's a great adventure on Escape from July 18th, 1948. It's called A Habit. It starred John Daner and a host of other great actors, including Louis Van Ruten and Barry Kroger. William Conrad was the voice of Escape on there, with Roy Rowan announcing as heard on CBS. Let's take a quick break, then it's more on the WGN Radio Theater.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
Wow, you know what, Lisa? We had a lot of people so far in the last couple of minutes like us, and we're well on our way to 2,200, which means I'm in trouble later.
No, this is fine.
It means I'm going to have to rub Lisa's feet. I'm not good at feet rubbing, so
really?
I'm just warning you ahead
of time.
You're
not good at it? Well, then don't bother.
We're going to videotape it. If this happens, if we can get to 2,200... likes on our Facebook page And we're up to about 21-something, right?
Right.
So we only need another maybe 100 more.
Your math skills are excellent.
Yeah. and you took a bath today?
I did, and so, a shower.
Good. Lisa,
I had
took
a shower and a bath today.
Lisa took a bath.
I'm clean.
She takes a bath once a week, whether she needs it or not.
Yeah, once a week is good.
So that's good,
Every
Lisa.
Other week is good.
All right. Well, we'll see
if we
make it to 2,200
likes. Yeah,
we'll
see if you're any good.
And people have been sharing it. That's a great idea, Lisa.
Yeah.
She comes up with good ideas once every 12 years.
The brains behind the show,
yeah,
guys.
She does. And we have to get a cake from the Ritz. It's part of our two-year anniversary. We have
Shantae,
to get a Ritz.
Do you like chocolate cake?
You like chocolate
cake?
Really chocolatey? Yeah, this is good
stuff. All
right,
we're going to order a cake from the Ritz-Carlton.
Right.
I'm on it.
Okay, so we're going to do something special in 2 weeks.
But what does that do for our listeners?
No, we're going to do something for our listeners. I'm
going to
come up with something.
Okay.
I'll run it by you, of course.
Okay.
Of course. Since it's the Lisa show.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay.
In this hour, it's the Jack Benny program starring Jack Benny and all his gang, special guest Groucho Marx. In our next hour, it's Murder at Midnight. You won't want to miss that. All brought to you in part by Cat's Pride.
It's time for Celebrity Scoop, brought to you by Cat's Pride.
This actress, who happens to be one of my favorites, stars in the upcoming crime drama Murder on the Orient Express, based on the 1934 Agatha Christie novel.
Yes.
And the winner gets two tickets to see the legendary Apollo Chorus in their anticipated spring concert on Friday, May 5th.
All right. The number to call, 312-981-7200. Here's a hint. This actress played the title role in 2013's Philomena.
I think I would like to go. I'd like to know if Anthony ever thought of me.
All right. Who is that wonderful actress? 312-981-7200. We'll be right back.
We're back. This is the WGN Theater, Radio Theater, where Carl and I continue to argue for 3 hours, and we play classic radio. We're playing Celebrity Scoop. Let's play it again.
I think I would like to go. I'd like to know if Anthony ever thought of me.
Hi, Dorothy. How are you? Dorothy? There she is. How are you, Dorothy?
Fine.
Good to hear from you. Did you happen to see Philomena? I absolutely love that movie.
Yes, I did.
Good one, huh?
Yes, very good.
So who is that wonderful actress?
Judi Dench.
That is Judi Dench, and you are a winner, Dorothy. We are so thrilled to give you a pair of tickets to see the legendary Apollo Chorus. This is their anticipated spring concert, American Masters, featuring the work of Emmy-winning music composer Jeff Beal. So they are performing Friday, May 5th, Sunday, May 7th. Your tickets are right here in Chicago, and you can get more information at apollochorus.org. Thank you so much for calling in. We appreciate your support.
Oh, thank you. Enjoy the show.
Thank you.
Thanks,
Take
Dorothy.
Care.
Appreciate it. Thanks for staying up late with us.
Yep.
All of our listeners, we're here till 2 o'clock in the morning. We have two more hours of classic radio coming your way here. And in just a moment, we'll have the Jack Benny program. But I would like to remind all of our listeners that we have a terrific website set up for you so that if you sign up, you can get a classic radio show emailed to you every single Monday. It's called Free Radio Classics. There's an S on the end there, freeradioclassics.com. Go there, put your name and your email address. You'll get an email saying to confirm it. You click that, and then every Monday, you'll get an email from me, and in that email will be an embedded classic radio show. And you'll also have a picture of whoever the star is. There'll be all kinds of historical information. It's a lot of fun, and the shows are digitally remastered as well. So 52 different classic radio shows are sent to you each and every year. Yes, Lisa?
Yes, Carl.
You have a perplexed look on your face.
No, all good.
Were you going to ask a question?
Nope.
Oh, all right. Want to listen to Jack Benny then?
I love Jack
Benny.
All
right. Once again, that's freeradioclassics.com. You can go there now and do it, because then Monday you'll get your first email from us.
Yep.
All right. It's time for the Jack Benny program. The greatest comedian, I think, of all time on radio and TV and the movies. He was born right here in Chicago, Lisa,
yep,
and then grew up in Waukegan. And he had just the best show. I really do believe that the Jerry Seinfeld show, the Seinfeld program, really was sort of an homage to the Jack Benny program, because Jerry Seinfeld was a comedian and he played himself on the Seinfeld show. Yep. Jack Benny was a comedian, played himself on the Seinfeld show. I mean, on the Jack Benny show. And Jack Benny had all these great characters around him. Dennis Day, Phil Harris, his wife Mary Livingston, and Eddie Rochester Anderson. And Seinfeld had all these great characters all around him.
And they both really had that self-deprecating humor.
They really did.
And were able to laugh at themselves.
And really, when you watch the Seinfeld show, Jerry doesn't really get all the laughs. It's really,
it's Kramer and
George and all that.
Of course.
Same thing with Jack Benny. So I just think that Jerry Seinfeld and Larry David, who created that series, I believe they probably said, you know, the Jack Benny program was one of the most successful shows of all time, and why don't we try to emulate that? I mean, right?
Well, it worked. I mean, a lot of times you try to emulate something and you just can't make it happen.
Yeah.
But this one actually worked.
I just think that's too much of a coincidence.
No,
really.
I agree with you
so
on this.
So I have nothing to back that up. I'm just saying, you know, it's just an observation.
I happen to think you're right on this one.
All right. Wow.
Crazy,
You're agreeing with me?
On this one, yes.
Oh, my goodness.
I know.
All right. It's time for the Jack Benny program. Let's go back to February 20th, 1944. Jack's special guest was Groucho Marx, part one of the Jack Benny program.
The Grape Nuts and Grape Nuts Flakes program, starring Jack Benny, with Mary Livingston, Phil Harris, Dennis Day, Rochester, and yours truly, Don Wilson. You know how we talk about a man being a swell provider, don't you? Meaning he's the guy that produces the goods and how. Well, tonight I'd like to talk about two swell providers. They're Grape Nuts and Grape Nuts Flakes. Boy, do they produce the goods. First, with that grand go-right-to-your-heart flavor, the baldy rich flavor of sun-ripened wheat and malted barley. Grape Nuts, crisp and crunchy. Grape Nuts Flakes, delicate, toasty brown flakes. Oh, boy. Why, when you sit down to a breakfast with one of these two cheerful, tempting treats, right away you feel all's right with the world. And you'll continue feeling that way all morning long. You see, nutritionists tell us the adequate breakfast should include a cereal with whole grain food values. And there you are. Both Grape Nuts and Grape Nuts Flakes are crammed full of whole grain nourishment, including iron, niacin, and vitamin B1. Yes, for delicious goodness plus grand nourishment, get those swell providers, Grape Nuts and Grape Nuts Flakes. And now, ladies and gentlemen, as our show opens today, we move the clock back a few hours and take you to Jack Benny's house, where Jack is entertaining his friend, Groucho Marx, and Rochester is busy cleaning up the library.
My heart tells me this is just a... My, this library sure is dusty. Must be 50 shelves in here. I wish Mr. Benny would get books for him. This room certainly looks empty. Just a pair of bookends holding up a social security card. My heart tells me this is just a fling. Yet you say our love means everything. Do you mean what you are saying? Hello, Mr. Benny's residence. Oh, hello, Sam. What's the good word? I can't get off today. And even if I could, I wouldn't participate. I made a New Year's resolution not to play dice anymore. I can't show you the resolution. I lost it in a crap game. Anyway, Sam, I'm too busy. We have company. I don't know. Some grouch by the name of Marx.
Oh, Rochester.
I'll be with you in a second, boss. I gotta say goodbye now, Sam. See you Wednesday. Oh, well, I'll see you Friday. The game ought to be over by then.
Chester. We're out in the patio.
Coming!
Boy, that was a tough game, wasn't it?
Yeah. I never thought you'd beat me.
Groucho, would you like to start another game, or do you want to rest first?
I don't need any rest, so only this time you set up the checkerboard.
Okay. Of course, I could get Rochester to set it up.
No, that way we wouldn't get any exercise at all.
That's right.
Did you call, boss?
Rochester, Mr. Marks and I just finished our game. I want a Coke. What would you like, Groucho?
Right now, I'd like heading the mob, but my sponsor wants me to say Blue Ribbon Beer.
Oh, well.
I'll have a man-to-man talk with my sponsor. I'll talk to him about the birds and the beers.
Groucho, please.
You're sorry you didn't think of that line, aren't you?
Yeah.
Well, that makes two of us that are sorry.
Come on, Groucho, let's play. Which checkers do you want this time, the blacks or the reds?
Doesn't make any difference, Jack. I'm colorblind.
Colorblind?
Sure, the minute I came in, I gave my coat to you and shook hands with Rochester.
That was me. I spent last week in Palm Springs. I couldn't get a room, so I had to sleep out in the sun.
Well, that wouldn't be so tough if you combed your eyebrows down over your eyes instead of up over your scalp.
I never thought of that.
I didn't think of it either. I just read it here in the script. I read anything they put in for me.
What?
Yes, sir. Here's your Coke, Mr. Benny, and Mr. Marks, here's your bottle of beer.
Thank you, Rochester.
That'll be 15 cents.
Rochester, Mr. Marks happens to be my guest.
Oh, I'm sorry, Mr. Marks. There's no charge for the beer.
Thanks. Say, how about a bottle opener?
That'll be 15 cents.
Rochester.
Fine-looking beer. Glass of grape nuts with a head on it. Wish I could say as much for you.
Rocco, stop clowning and let's get on with our game of checkers.
Okay, it's your move.
So it is. Let me see. I think I'll move this man. No, I think I'll move this one.
What have you got there, a butler or an outboard horse?
What? Oh, now let me see. Oh, yes, I think I'll move this checker.
Don't!
Huh?
Don't provoke at me!
What?
It's a very subtle game.
Now, let's see. Maybe if I move this one.
Wait!
Huh?
Wait till the sun shines. La, 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 la.
I wish Frank Sinatra was on my side.
Let me see. Maybe if I move this one. Yes, I think I will.
Now, wait a minute, Jack. Don't you want to wait till you hear from the hit parade?
Now, wait a minute. I'm going to move this one.
My eyes tell me that is not the one.
Huh?
Unless you're playing just for fun.
What?
Do you know what you want to do?
Quiet, Rochester. I'm trying to concentrate.
This is the first time I've ever been to a checker recital.
Now, let's see.
I'd have been better off if I paid for the beer. Say, Jack, we each have 8 checkers left. How about doubling the bet?
Oh, I don't know.
All right, let's leave it a nickel.
Yeah, if we make it any more, it takes all the fun out of the game. Oh, say, Groucho, look, before we play any more, I want to show you a trick. Watch me balance these 5 red checkers on my fingernails. Look.
Hey, that's a pretty good stunt.
Uh-oh, boss, here comes your crazy boarder, Mr. Billingsley.
Oh, yes. Hello, Mr. Billingsley.
Hello, Mr. Benny. Getting a manicure, I see.
No, I'm playing checkers with a friend of mine. This is Groucho Marx.
How do you do, Mr. Billingsley?
Now, don't tell me your name. Let me guess.
It's Groucho Marx.
I'll get it. Mr. Billingsley, it's Groucho Marx.
Marx, M-A-R-X, M-A-R-X.
Mr. Billingsley, if you don't mind, we're trying to play a game of checkers. Oh, then I'll run along. Goodbye, Mr. Benny.
Goodbye.
Come on, Groucho, let's continue with the game.
Say, Jack, what's that peculiar odor I smell around here?
Oh, that's my camel.
I think I'll get one for my house. I need an excuse, too.
Well, let's get on with our game. Gee, Groucho, isn't California wonderful? Here it is February, and we're sitting outdoors in our shirt sleeves, playing checkers.
You're right, Jack. It's a beautiful day, not a cloud in the sky.
Yeah. And say, isn't it... Groucho, isn't it funny how all of us radio comedians kid about the California weather?
Yes, and try to make people believe that the sun doesn't always shine here.
You said it. Go ahead, Groucho. It's your move.
Now, let me see. I'll move this one.
All right. Then I'll move...
Just a moment, Jack. That's off the board.
Oh. Oh, then I'll move here. Go ahead, Groucho.
Now, let's see. I'll move this one.
Well, that makes me move this one.
That is a pretty clever move, Jack. Now, let's see.
Well, I'm afraid you're going to lose this game, Groucho.
Oh, I don't care, Jack. Just sitting here looking at you is sheer ecstasy.
Keep your mind on the game, Groucho.
Who moved last?
I did. Hey, wait a minute. Look what time it is. My goodness, I have to go over to the studio for my broadcast. Say, Groucho, do you want me to drive you home?
No, thanks. I'll just wait here and catch my house as it floats by.
Oh, yes. Yes, you do live upstream, don't you? Just above the dam.
Yes. Yes, we come down and spawn during the month of May.
See, I got to pick up Mary and take her to the studio. So, say, Groucho, why don't you come along and see my program?
All right, but don't forget, you're coming over to my program next week.
Okay, Groucho, it's a deal.
Okay, oh, goodbye.
Better come in.
Why?
That California dust is coming down in buckets.
Oh, it is at that. Come on in, Groucho.
Oh, Butterfly. Butterfly.
Yes, Miss Livingston?
Mr. Benny's picking me up in a few minutes, and I don't know what dress to wear.
Well...
You think it'd be all right if I wore my green dress with my brown coat?
Oh, it's all right with me if it's all right with you.
Well, the only trouble is when I wear that green dress, everybody keeps looking at me.
You should worry, as long as you got it on.
I suppose so. Anyway, Mr. Benny always likes to see me nicely dressed at the broadcast. I wish he were here now.
Well, don't worry. Your green dress looks awfully pretty.
Well, I'm not worried about the dress now. I'm thinking about the shoes. I don't know whether he'd like me to wear high heels or low heels.
I think Mr. Benny is a low heel type.
Butterfly, what do you mean?
I mean, he'd like you to look shorter than him.
Oh.
Now, take my boyfriend, Jerome. He always wants me to wear high heels.
Why? Does he want you to look taller?
No, he likes to trip me.
Trip you? Well, that's the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard. Oh, that must be Mr. Benny now. I better hurry along, Butterfly. See you when I get home from the broadcast.
I hope you'll be very funny on the program.
Well, thanks, Butterfly. I'm glad you're interested.
Oh, it's not that. When you don't get love, I can't show my face on Central Avenue.
Well, I'll try my best. Goodbye.
Bye.
Mary, hurry up. We'll be late for the program.
I'm coming. I'm coming.
All right, that's the first portion of the Jack Benny program. Going back to a broadcast date of February 20th, 1944. More in a minute.
Go ahead, Dennis.
Okay. Oh, Mr. Benny, before I sing, there's something I'd like to ask you.
What is it, kid?
Did Mrs. George Bernard Shaw leave you anything?
No, no, Dennis. Go ahead and sing, will you?
I've got you deep in the heart of me. So deep in my heart, you're really a part of me. I've got you under my skin. I tried so not to give in. I said to myself, this affair never will go so well. But why should I try to resist when, darling, I know so well I've got you under my skin. I'd sacrifice anything, come what might, for the sake of having you near, in spite of a warning voice that comes in the night and repeats in my ear. Oh, you're not a fool, you never can win. Use your mentality, wake up to reality. But each time I do, just the thought of you makes me stop before I begin. Cause I've got you under my skin. Under my skin.
That was sung by Dennis Day. And now, ladies and gentlemen, for our mystery melodrama entitled...
Say, Jack.
What?
Did you hear Fred Allen's program last week?
Well, I was driving along in my car listening to the radio just as Allen was coming on the air.
Oh, then you heard him.
No. Fortunately, I had a wreck in the nick of time.
Well, he was talking to Luella Parsons about the book she wrote.
Oh, the one about all the leading radio and screen personalities?
Yes, and Allen said if she tore out the pages about you, the book would sell for a higher price.
Oh. Well, Allen was just mad because his life story was so short. Born in Boston, died in vaudeville. Buried in radio. There. Anyway, Mary, that book Luella Parsons wrote is really swell. It's called The Gay Illiterate.
Hey, wait a minute, Jackson. Don't get personal.
Bill, I wasn't talking about you. I just mentioned the title of the book, The Gay Illiterate.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong in being gay.
Thank you, kid. Anyway, getting back to Alan, I could tell you more, but since this is Good Fellowship Week, I must admit that deep in my heart, I love Fred Allen. And now, folks...
Say, Jackson, that reminds me. You know, the magazine Billboard had a radio editor's poll, and they voted Fred Allen's program the funniest on the air.
Oh, they did, eh? Well, let me tell you...
Jack, this is Good Fellowship Week.
Oh, yes. Congratulations, Freddie. And now, ladies and gentlemen, for our thrilling mystery melodrama entitled The Gilroy Murder Case, or He Must Have Been a Sword Swallower Because the Stabbing Was an Inside Job. That sounds like a Groucho Marx if I ever heard one. The scene opens. The scene opens behind closed doors. The scene opens behind closed doors at police headquarters, where we find that rough, tough, hard-bitten super sleuth, Captain O'Benny. Curtain. Music.
Lay that pistol down.
Captain O'Benny!
I wish you wouldn't scare me, O'Harris. I'm alone here, you know. Now, what is it?
Well, Sergeant O'Day and me want to know if you have any more assignments for us.
More? What happened on that Langley murder case I sent you two to investigate?
Oh, that we did, sir.
That's right, Captain. We went over there, but we found the man dead.
Good. What did you do?
We buried him and went home.
Fine bunch of assistants I've got. Now listen, men. I'll take it. Hello, Police Captain O'Benny speaking.
Oh, Captain. Captain, this is Mrs. Gilroy.
Yes?
Come over to my house at once. My husband was murdered.
Murdered? When?
Now.
Now?
Yes, he ate a good breakfast, but I did a better job.
I see. Well, we'll be right over. Goodbye. All right, men, there's been a murder. Close the doors and don't let anybody out.
But, Captain, it didn't happen here.
Oh, that's right. Come on, fellas, let's go. The police car's outside. And we'll find the murder of Mrs. Gilroy's husband, or my name ain't Clearwater Clapsaddle O'Benny. This is the house, men. There she is now. We're the police. Are you the widow?
Yes. Oh, poor Donald. He was such a good husband. Oh, Donald, why did you leave me?
I know how you feel, Mrs. Gilroy.
And what an ordeal I'll have to go through. You see, Donald loved my voice, and I promised him I'd sing at his funeral tomorrow.
We're going to bury him today.
Quiet and cut out the dialect.
Oh.
I hope he hears me. Oh, my poor Donald.
You promised your husband you'd sing at his funeral?
Yes. Mersey-dosin', little lambsy-divey, ipsy-divey too, wouldn't you? Oh, poor, poor Donald.
I'm sorry, ma'am.
Hey, Chief.
What?
I happen to know that yesterday Mrs. Gilroy took out $1 million insurance policy on her husband.
Uh-huh.
Then she went out and got herself a pistol permit. Then she bought a sharp knife, an axe, and a pound of arsenic.
Well, then what killed him?
Measles.
Oh, my poor husband. He's gone. He left me with 7 children. 7 little children that I'll have to raise myself. Oh, why did he have to die and leave me to care for those poor little innocent darlings? Oh, why?
Wait a minute. Calm down. You haven't any children.
I know, but this is the week of the Academy Award, and I thought I'd make a stab at it.
Well, forget about it. Come in.
Say, I understand that a man was murdered here a couple of hours ago.
That's right. What do you know about it?
Nothing. I just want to rent his room.
Well, I don't know.
I'm sorry, but his room's not for rent, honey.
Okay. Goodbye, honey.
Aha, my first suspect.
What are you talking about? I never saw that man before in my life.
Well, I'm going to search this room. Now, listen, Mrs. Gilroy.
Hey, Chief, Chief!
What is it, O'Day?
Would you think a man is guilty if you saw him running around with a smoking gun in one hand, a bloodstained knife in the other, and he just kept screaming, I did it! I did it! I'm glad! I tell you, I'm glad I did it! Ha! I'm glad I did it!
Why, of course that man is guilty.
Well, if I see anyone like that, I'll arrest him.
That O'Day is a great detective. Now listen, Mrs. Gilroy. I'm going to search this room to find the murder of your husband. I'll look in this closet first. Ah, here's a gun. Put it in your handkerchief, O'Harris.
In my handkerchief?
Yes, then you won't erase the fingerprint.
Okay.
Now let's... O'Harris, what happened?
I shouldn't have blown my nose with it.
That's all right. You look better that way. Now, come on, Harold Harris. Let's go out in the backyard and look for more clues. Hey, look. Down on the grass.
Yeah, and he's wearing a checkered suit.
A checkered suit? Say, that gives me a great idea. Can you play checkers, O'Hara's?
Yes, Chief.
Then what are we waiting for?
Sure, we can use the buttons for checkers.
Okay. It's your move, O'Hara.
Now, let's see. Okay, I'll move this one.
Okay. I think I'll move this one.
All right, I'll jump you.
Doggone, it looks like you got me cornered this time. Well, let's see. I'll move this one here, and then move this one.
Mr. Wilson, you worked real hard in that mystery drama, so I'm going to do some announcing for you. Folks, you just don't know how good breakfast can be unless you've enjoyed that malty Risk toasty brown flake cereal that's American favorite.
Now, just a second, Rochester. You left out something.
Oh, no, Mr. Wilson. Folks, if you've never tried this distinctive flake cereal with the sweet as a nut flavor...
Rochester, you left out something.
Oh, no, Mr. Wilson. Folks, you never tasted anything more delicious than that malty-rich goodness, and that wonderful whole grain nourishment is something you need every day.
But, Rochester, listen, and this is important. You've left out something.
What, Mr. Wilson? What did I leave out?
You left out the name. What's the name of this malty-rich, toasty brown flake cereal with the wonderful whole grain nourishment?
Huh? Why,
Well, Rochester, I haven't heard you mention it yet.
Mr. Wilson, when you say the malty-rich, whole-grain, flake cereal that's an American favorite, why, everybody just knows it's... Well, I gotta go now. I'll see you later, Mr. Wilson.
Rochester, it's Grape Nuts Flake.
Well, what do you know? So long, folks.
Groucho, I'll see you on your program next week. Good night, everybody. Good night.
This is the National Broadcasting Company.
All right, that is the Jack Benny program, an early show going back to 1944. That was sponsored by Grape Nuts Flakes, and his special guest was Groucho Marx. They did a cast play, The Gilroy Murder Case. Hope you enjoyed the Jack Benny program. Let's take a quick break, then it's more on the WGN Radio Theater. All right, so Lisa wants to sing something. She wants me and her to sing something, and we're going to videotape it. And put it where? On Facebook? I can't sing though, Lisa.
We're gonna come up with a little duet and we're gonna
sing
and we're gonna post it. We'll figure it out. We might not post it till tomorrow. I don't know. We'll see.
No, we'll post it. We'll do it and get it over with. I can't sing though, Lisa. You know I'm not good at singing.
No, this'll be fun.
Oh man.
We'll have some fun.
You see this magazine
see
here?
What I do. Elizabeth Taylor.
You know, this week I got so many emails from people thanking me for telling them, and this is honest to gosh, thanking me for telling them about Remind magazine.
Yeah.
They subscribed, and some of them went to Barnes & Noble and picked this up. So, folks, there's a magazine that I write for. I'm one of the authors. I have a column called Radio 360. It's on page 17 of every issue. It's a 50-page magazine. Every month it comes out. It's called Remind magazine. This month the theme is about Elizabeth Taylor, and she's on the cover. She's gorgeous.
It's a great picture.
And I write about whoever the theme is. Like, the theme is about Elizabeth Taylor, so I wrote about her radio work in my column. But there is all kinds of articles about her and all of her jewelry and, of course, her marriages, quite a few of them.
How many times was she married?
I think 7 or 8 times.
At least, yeah.
Yeah. And then there's all kinds of trivia and puzzles, historical information. There's posters. Look at, there's a Cleopatra poster there. These guys at Remind Magazine, which is a division of TV Guide, so you know you're getting a great magazine. They're owned by the same company that owns TV Guide. And this magazine comes out once a month. It's 50 pages, full color. And the April issue, if you subscribe, the April issue, it has Elizabeth Taylor on the cover. And then they do it, like I say, they do a theme every single month. It's great. It's a great magazine.
It is a great magazine. I just recently got my April issue. I just got it this week.
I know our listeners would love this magazine, so I told them I'd talk about it because not only are they nice enough to let me write for them and not charge me to do it. you know, which they don't make
they
me
don't
pay
charge
them.
You to pay.
They don't make me pay them to be.
There's a lot of fun stuff. There's crossword puzzles and trivia and games
that.
And fun.
Chock full, as they say.
It's a lot of fun. You could keep it in the bathroom.
There's all kinds of this is. They got a thing here. 1950s, reeling in the years. What was the original name of the Peanuts comic strip by Charles Schulz? That's a good question. I don't know the answer to that. This was Elvis Presley's first film. I don't know. His TV series featured his wife, Mary Livingston. Ah, we know that.
Yes.
And skits frequently spoofed his cheapness. Well, that one we know, the Jack Benny program. CBS's logo was an eye. What was in the background?
The background of the eye?
This is great, right? And then, of course, and it says the answers are on page 22, so you don't have to go crazy wait 30 days.
Tell us now.
I'll bet you Roger would know a lot of these. Roger's like an encyclopedia. So
Roger, what was the background of the eye?
I'm pleading Sergeant Schulz.
I know nothing. Nothing. Oh, that was such a funny TV series, Hogan's Heroes.
You know what's funny? Yeah. I watched it all the time, and I didn't like it.
Really?
What, Hogan's Heroes?
Yeah, my brothers used to watch it, and I would sit there and watch it with them, and I'm just like, I hate this show. But I watched it anyway. Maybe it's a girl thing. I don't know.
Well, you know, same thing kind of happens with the Three Stooges.
No, now that one I like.
Well, see, now then you're kind of in the minority because the majority of women I've talked to just don't care for it.
Yeah.
I know. I grew up watching the Three Stooges.
Here's a great question for Roger.
Okay.
Roger, in 1975, what was the best picture? Give you a hint.
What was the best picture?
Best picture. I'll give you a hint. Okay. Jack Nicholson starred in it. Any idea? And
Jack Nicholson starred in the best.
And he won Best Actor for it. Now, I think I would have known this one.
This one. 75.
Yeah, 1975.
Oh. I can't even remember yesterday.
Yeah, I know what movie that is.
What do you think, Lisa?
I can't think of it. Oh, just a second.
One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest.
Yes, that's what I was going
to
say.
Yeah, sure. Because
I swear to you I was going
Roger,
to say that.
Roger, do you believe her?
I love that movie with the nurse, Ratchet.
Yeah, Louise Fletcher. I met her one time. She was so nice. I said, man, you were such a mean person in that movie. She's
I
know, I'm not mean. She won Best Actress for that.
I remember that.
And then Best Actor in a Supporting Role. You ready for this? My buddy George Burns for The Sunshine Boys.
Oh, great movie.
Best Actress in a Supporting Role, Lee Grant for Shampoo.
Oh.
So, I mean, you know, I got to tell you, it's just nonstop.
No, this is all from that
magazine.
Yeah,
magazine.
It's all about stuff like that. And look at this picture of Liz and
now, of course,
Richard
you said
Burton.
how many marriages did Liz tell?
I don't know, seven
I
or eight.
Just asked
but about two of them were to Richard Burton.
Yeah, two of them.
Yes.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
I mean, what would make somebody marry someone and then marry them again? Oh my
The same person you left seems like it's just doomed to fail the second time.
Well, it can happen, I guess.
Did it happen to you, Carl?
Could it happen to me?
Yes.
No.
I was just wondering.
Absolutely not. It could not happen to me.
You're so bad.
But, Roger, I know you would love this. Roger, I know you would love this.
Magazine. I love that
And
stuff.
I know our listeners will. So here's the great thing, folks. You can pick up Remind Magazine at any Barnes & Noble. They also have them at all Walmart stores. But because I write for the magazine, all of our listeners will set up a website. If they want to get this magazine, they can get it for about 60% off the newsstand price by going to remindmagazine.com. Remindmagazine.com. I think it's great, and I want to tell all our listeners about it because I know they'll love the magazine. My mom gets this. She loves it.
I get it.
Roger, you got to get this magazine.
I will get that magazine.
All right. So
you know, I love reading that stuff. I got so much time on my
stuff
hands.
There's a lot of magazines out there.
Yeah.
But this is a really special magazine.
There's something about actually having a magazine in your hand, like rather than just like an ebook or something.
Yeah. Right.
It's I love them.
I agree. Mm-hmm. All right. In our next hour, we're going to tune into Murder at Midnight. You won't want to miss that.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
Program 165 in the series. Our two-year anniversary is coming up in 2 weeks. We're going to do something special for our listeners. I don't know what that is yet, but I'll check with you, Lisa.
Okay.
All right.
We'll talk about it.
I'll make sure that you're happy with it.
Well, I'll probably think of it.
If you like it.
If I think of it, I'll like it.
And we'll do it.
Okay.
Because Lisa... You know,
look,
what, Lisa?
Somebody's got to come up with the good ideas around here.
And you, every 12 years, you come up with a good one.
It's got to be me or Shantae.
You
know? One
so
of
I've
us
only known
it.
You nine, so I'm waiting
now
for
now, that's two, three more years, and I'll come up with something great.
In this hour, Murder at Midnight, starring Elspeth Eric. That's a weird name, right? Elspeth?
I like it.
Elspeth. From
sounds
19...
like you have a list.
Elspeth Eric, 1947, all brought to you in part by Cat's Pride.
Celebrity Scoop, brought to you by Cat's Pride. Meow.
This actress stars in the upcoming musical comedy Pitch Perfect 3, the third installment in the Pitch Perfect series.
All right, what do they win?
This is exciting. Four tickets to the Chicago Artisan Chocolate Show. Mm. Are you kidding? On April 22nd and 23rd, a chocolate show. I'm already excited just thinking about that.
I love chocolate too.
Right. There's going
to
be demonstrations and
swim in
chocolate sculptures. Did you want to swim in chocolate?
Yeah, like in Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. They swim in that river of chocolate.
I think I'd prefer just to eat the chocolate.
Okay. All right.
Okay.
All right. So here's the number to call, 312-981-7200. Here's a hint. She starred in the first two Pitch Perfects.
You are physically flawless.
Thank you.
But it doesn't mean I like you.
That's how I feel about you, Carl.
Thanks, Lisa. The number to call, 312-981-7200. Who is that actress? We'll find our winner after these words.
Alrighty, we're back. We're playing Celebrity Scoop. Let's play it again.
You are physically flawless.
Thank you.
But it doesn't mean I like you.
Let's talk to Nick on the phone line. Hey, Nick.
Hey, how's it going?
I'm good. How you doing?
Doing well, doing well. I understand I got the answer here.
Well, tell us what it is.
So the guys in the car are telling me it's Anna Kendrick.
Those guys are your friends because they are right. At least they didn't steer you wrong. Get it? Steer you?
Beautiful.
Okay. You are a winner. You've got four tickets to the Chicago Artisan Chocolate Show. Oh, my gosh. It's on April 22nd and 23rd at Plumbers Hall. That's in the West Loop. They're going to have demonstrations and chocolate sculptures. People can check it out and get tickets and details at chocolateevents.net. And, you know, Carl's thinking about Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory, so maybe you'll see a little bit of that, too.
It's going to be fun. It'll be a lot of fun, Nick. Yeah.
Thank you so much for calling
all right,
in.
Buddy.
Say hi
thanks,
to your friends.
Man. Appreciate it. Hi, everyone.
I plan on it.
All right.
Hey, guys, we're all going to the chocolate show.
That's
right. Yes, you are.
Have some chocolate right. on us. Take
drive
care.
Drive safe.
Thank you.
Drive
Thank
safe,
you.
Buddy. All right. Thanks a lot. All right. It's time now for Murder at Midnight. It was a mystery horror series. Came to ABC Radio in 1946. And Raymond Morgan, Lisa, who was the host of this, he used to be a Long Island minister, but he said, you know what? This radio thing, I'm going to leave the cloth for radio. That's what happened. It had a six-year run, and it used all of the best New York actors, Lawson Zerbe, Carl Swenson, fellow Carl, Lon Clark, Barry Kroger, Raymond Edward Johnson. It was directed by Anton M. Leder. It was a terrific mystery series, and we have an episode for you now from April 25th, 1947. It's called Nightmare, and it stars Elspeth Eric. Here's part one of Murder at Midnight.
Murder at Midnight.
No, Betty, no. Don't make me...
I say yes. It's got to be now and here. She's got to die.
Betty.
I say yes. Here. I'll hold her arm.
All right, Betty, but...
No, 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 don't. I don't want to die.
Midnight. The witching hour when the night is darkest, our fears the strongest, and our strength at its lowest ebb. Midnight, when the graves gape open and death strikes. How? You'll learn the answer in just a minute in Nightmare. And now, Murder at Midnight. Tales of mystery and terror by radio's Masters of the Macabre. Our story by Joe Zabruskall is one of the most terrifying and fantastic nightmares we've ever heard. Its title, Nightmare.
For Pete's sake. Hey, stop it, Helen. Stop it. It's me. It's Ernie.
What? Where am I?
In bed. Where do you suppose? It's almost 12 o'clock. I wish you'd let me get some sleep.
Oh, thank heaven. Oh, it was... must have been just a dream. Oh, thank the Lord. Oh, Ernie, it was so real. I dreamed somebody was leaning over me just now with a pillow. Oh, it was horrible. They were trying to smother me to death. And Ernie.
Yeah?
It was you.
What? Oh, me. Oh, that's a beaut. Where's the light? Oh, my kiss you back. What, you poor, foolish little... Come here, Butch. I'll kiss you back.
No, no, don't touch me. Keep away.
Huh? What is this?
Pillow in your hand.
Oh, for crying out, Bells. Can't I even straighten it out?
Sorry, dear. Gee. Don't mind me, but that horrible nightmare, it seemed so real. Oh, darling, wasn't that crazy? You, the sweetest, gentlest husband in the world.
Then why?
Oh, Ernie, now please, don't look so hurt.
Now I can't even look hurt. I just murdered my wife in her sleep, didn't I?
No, you were just about to. I mean...
Oh, no, what the... Everything's happening tonight. Hello. What? Who? Wrong number. And what's more, this is a heck of a time to be ringing. Why, what a nerve. On a night. Thought maybe that was the police you phoned in your dream. Now will you go to sleep?
Ernie Kraft, I'm sure I didn't mean to insinuate anything. I was just telling you my dream. You asked, didn't you?
Oh, you're a character. I guess I'll have to put you in that book I never wrote, too. Well, now what?
That was in it, too.
Huh?
That book you never wrote. You nagged about it so much, no wonder. Oh, and that look when you bent over me like a madman.
Oh.
Ernie, what on earth do you suppose made me have a nightmare?
That's easy. You would insist on eating hamburgers after the show tonight.
Yes, I did, didn't I, when we got out of the movies. Hamburgers, of course. Ernie, they were part of my dream, too. Hamburgers. Oh. Ernie, stop punching on that pillow, please.
All right, go ahead then. Better tell me your dream, all of it. Neither of us will sleep until you do. I'll just light this butt. Now, let's have it. Gruesome details.
Well, I don't know if I can remember now. It was all so hazy and terrifying.
Well, what happened before I smothered you with a pillow?
A crazy quilt. Something about your job, and I was a millstone around your neck, and hamburgers, and you hated me, and July 15th.
July 15th?
Yes, I can't imagine what that meant.
Look, start at the start. Why did I decide to murder you?
Because of that other woman, your secret love.
Huh?
You promised her you'd kill me tonight when I was asleep.
My secret love?
Yes, she had you in her spell.
Oh, that's kind of bad casting, isn't it, Butch? I'm the dishes and dustpan type, remember? In the 5 years we've been married, have I ever looked at another...
I know. I told you it was a crazy dream.
Maybe you want me to eliminate my one night a week out, too. My Saturday gin rummy with the boys.
Oh, no.
Who was my secret love? Did she have a face?
Oh, this is the silliest part of it, Ernie. It's absolutely ridiculous. It was that girl, Betty Daniels.
Betty Daniels? Who's she?
You remember that tall, dark-haired artist I introduced you to at Cape Cod last summer?
At the
exhibition.
No, I don't... Oh, wait a minute. Trousers, long cigarette holder, yes. Very intense.
Yes, very intense.
But what the devil... What was she doing in your dream? We said hello to her, we walked off, and that was that.
casual.
Yes, I know. I hardly remember myself. I can't imagine why I dreamt of her. Why?
No,
don't touch me. Don't. No. Oh, that dream. That awful dream. So crazy. And yet it seemed to be telling me something, warning me. Strange and weird. You know how dreams are. First thing I remember is Provincetown and us looking at the art exhibition just the way we did last summer. Only now the picture was about 10 feet tall and hanging crooked. And then she came along. Betty Daniels. Just the way she did then.
Hello, Helen.
And I introduced you the same as I did then. Only not exactly the same. Like in a dream. You know, silly. Betty Daniels, this is my husband, Ernest. He is very faithful to me.
How do you do?
How do you do? We've never met.
That's a marvelous Goya painting, Helen, don't you think? Or do you prefer hamburgers?
Well, I...
My wife prefers hamburgers, Miss Daniels.
Oh, I didn't know. Only after a movie, though. Anyway, I'm sure I can't tell one painting from another. My husband's the art lover in the family, I guess. And I just tag along for the fish. Only I don't like fish. I like hamburgers.
I know. You don't wear trousers like I do. You're fluffy.
Betty and I met on the beach, Ernie. She's a painter. Our rowboats got tangled. That's how we met.
Yes, it was all very casual. I hardly remember.
Well.
Ernie and I are going back to New York today. Isn't that a shame? I wish you two wouldn't stare at each other so.
Well, we better run along, Helen. Lots of packing to do.
Ernie has got to get back to his silly old job. He's a reporter.
A reporter? Shouldn't he write a book he never wrote?
Well, imagine. That's what he always says. Well, goodbye. I'm wondering why I'm thinking of you now. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
The scenes sort of dissolve into each other like a kind of dream movie. And I'm trembling with fright because I have a feeling I know how the plot's going to end. The next thing I remember, Ernie, I'm in a penthouse apartment on Park Avenue. Everything zigzag, even the butler. And I'm the maid, Helen, there. And what I'm doing is turning pages for Betty Daniels while she plays the piano. For you, Ernie. Isn't that crazy? Neither of you hardly notice me at all. And I keep trying to open my mouth. Like that. But it's stuck. And I'm absolutely frozen at what I overhear.
Darling.
Yes, Butch.
Love our loveness.
Out of this world. Ah, this is heaven.
Ernie, do you ever call your wife Butch?
Never. What gave you that idea? I hate the very sight of her.
She's really a little ignoramus.
You're telling me she prefers hamburgers.
Ernie, do you think she suspects yet?
Of course not. She thinks I'm at a gin rummy game.
Darling, you're blind, but she's not. She knows.
She knows? How'd she find out?
You may go, Helen. Helen, do you hear me? Why don't you go? Answer me. Have you lost your tongue?
Oh, well, there's murder in the air.
How'd she find out, Betty? Tell me.
Darling, do you suppose she doesn't know what happened last summer in Provincetown? After we all said goodbye, you came to look for your cigarette lighter. She knew you hadn't lost your lighter, that you'd come back to ask me for my New York telephone number.
She knew?
Of course, intuition. She knows we've been having a secret affair ever since. I can't go on like this. I'm tired of being just a gin rummy excuse. Ernie, if you love me, you'll do what I promised.
But I pity her so.
Don't be a fool. Isn't it her fault you never wrote that book you never wrote?
It's true. She wouldn't let me give up my job. She's a millstone around my neck.
Then get rid of her, Ernie. Get rid of her, and I'll bring your genius to the world. I've plenty of money, and you can give up reporting and write that book. Fulfill your destiny.
Fulfill my destiny. Oh, Betty, you'll help me.
Yes. But only if you forget July 15th. You'll forget about July 15th. It won't mean a thing to you from now on.
Not a thing. I promise.
And you'll do away with her. The way I told you.
Yes. Like you told me.
The pillow.
The pillow. Don't let her hear.
Just look at her standing there at the piano. You've been spying on us, Helen, haven't you? Haven't you? Answer. Have you lost your tongue? Oh, don't try to fool us. We know you're the real Helen and not the maid. She's heard everything we've said, Ernie. So we'll have to kill her now.
Unless she gives me a divorce.
Will you give him a divorce? Answer or we'll finish you right now.
Hey, well.
Here's the pillow, Ernie. Right now. I'll hold her on.
Answer, Helen. Don't make me do it. Answer, Helen. I pity you, but I hate you.
Let her cry. Look at her. Stricken dumb. Her mouth's moving, but she's not saying anything.
What are you trying to say? Helen, please don't make me do it. Will you give me a divorce? Tell me.
Ernie, stop. Fools we are. Do you want her body found here? I'll hang for it.
She's got to die. She's got to.
No, not here. Not like this. There must be some other way. Later tonight, Ernie, after the movies. Hamburgers. She'll get hungry for hamburgers. She's bound to. The waiter will ask her how she wants them. That'll give you the clue. And then, when she's asleep... and they'll find her in her bed. The perfect crime. Don't you see, Ernie? Hamburgers.
A frightened girl reliving a dream that was more terrible than any reality. A dream that could even become more terrible. As the clock on the mantel ticks on, and the hands draw closer to 12 o'clock and...
Murder at midnight.
All right, we're listening to a good mystery on Murder at Midnight. This is called Nightmare, starring Elspeth Eric from 1947. We'll get back to it in just a few minutes, but first these words on the WGN Radio Theater.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
So, Lisa, in two more weeks, we will be on the air 2 full years. Here on WGN with the WGN Radio Theater. And I'm sure between your two brains and mm-hmm. my one brain, mm-hmm. we'll figure out something fun to do with the audience. But maybe our audience has some good ideas, too.
Right.
Should we ask them to help us out? What should we do for our two-year anniversary that you would like to hear, folks? Give us some ideas, right?
I offered to bake a cake. He said no. I offered to buy a cake. He said no.
No, I want you to buy a cake, but I want you to buy the cake at the Ritz.
Oh, I said any cake except the cake
because
at the Ritz.
Shanti
because
likes
it's out
that
of my.
Too. She likes the chocolate.
That's
cake,
out though. Of my price range. There.
What? Come
what?
On. You know.
What?
What do you mean?
I sent Carl
instead
a picture of this gorgeous
trade
chocolate
in,
cake and said I would
in your
purchase that
convertible Bentley and get a Rolls.
Honestly, I don't even like cake that much.
Really?
I'm not a cakey person.
So our text in line, 312-981-7200. We only have a couple of weeks to figure this out, less than a couple of weeks.
I like a homemade like apple pie or something.
But no,
like
I
that.
Think it should involve the listeners. I think
I
it should
know.
Be something to thank them because they've been with us for
we
all these weeks and months.
We should do a meet and greet somewhere so we can
yeah,
meet them.
That would be fun. I
because
would like
we
to
talk
do that.
To everybody on the phone and through our text line and through our Facebook.
I'll wear my lifts in my shoes that day.
And don't
day,
forget
then.
Your Italian horn and your yeah. John Travolta costume. And
if I'm
going to
meet listeners, I want to be as tall as I possibly can.
I think we should do a meet and greet.
Yeah.
It has to be somewhere around here so that we can do it maybe right,
right
before
we don't have
the
a lot
radio
of time.
Show.
We got to figure this out.
Okay, well, if anybody out there owns a cool restaurant or a bar down the road, we'll come
right.
hang out with you.
312-981-7200. Text us. What would you like us to do for our two-year anniversary coming up in 2 weeks? But right now, it's the conclusion to Murder at Midnight.
And now, back to Murder at Midnight and Nightmare.
Well, let's hear the rest of this dream of yours, Helen. What happened after that?
Well, it was after that it really got bad. It was so crazy, but so real. I don't know what stopped you, Ernie, kept you from killing me then, but you didn't. And still, I knew you were going to. You dragged me out into the street and then into a movie and then out again. And I looked at you and you were crying because you'd made up your mind to finish me off when we got home.
You should have let me write that book, Helen. You should have.
And
And I kept crying, I love you, Ernie. Don't kill me. Please don't kill me tonight.
But I've got to. I've got to. I pity you, but I've got to.
And you pulled me along through the streets again. I was terrified. And then I saw a policeman and I cried to him, Officer!
Yes? What is it, lady?
Please save me. My husband here wants to kill me.
Oh, wants to kill you, eh? Why, that's a crime. A felony.
Oh, why are you joking? Don't joke about it. Do something, please. I'm frightened to death.
Don't pay any attention to her, officer. She's dreaming.
I'm not. Don't believe him. He wants to wait till I go to sleep tonight. And then as soon as I fall asleep...
Oh, come now, lady. He wouldn't do it to you in your sleep. Why, you're cute. Not in her sleep now, would you, mister?
Of course not, officer. Not in her sleep. As a matter of fact, we're stopping off first for a hamburger. She's hungry.
No, 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 I'm not. I mean, I am, but I don't dare. I'm starving, but I don't dare. He's just waiting for me to order one, officer, to see what I'll say. And then he'll take me home and kill me.
Oh, lady, stop. Sure, and you're breaking me heart.
Come along, dear.
No, no, officer, please protect me. Don't let him take me, please.
Come along, I say, darling.
And then we were in the little lunchroom in our neighborhood, around the corner from our house, sitting on stools. The counterman came over to us. He winked at you, Ernie, and you winked back at him, and he said...
Evening, folks. What do you have?
You looked at me, but I shook my head. I shook my head and the tears were streaming down my face.
I tell you what, Joe, make it 2 hamburgers.
Right. Rare, medium, or well?
Medium, Joe. Make mine medium.
Right. And the little lady?
How do you have yours, Ellen? How do you like yours? Make hers medium, too, Joe.
2 hamburgers, medium.
2 medium, coming out.
And what do you have on them, folks? Relish or onion?
Relish. Make mine with relish, Joe.
Right. And the little lady?
The man's talking to you, Helen. How'll you have yours? Answer him, I say. Answer him. This is it. How'll you have yours?
No, I won't tell him. If I do, you'll know. You'll know how to do it. So I won't tell him. I won't. The next thing I dreamt, we were home again. Sitting in the parlor. Everything exactly the same, Ernie. Just like tonight before we went to bed. But in my dream, I was sitting paralyzed in a cold sweat, waiting for the word from you that meant my death.
Oh, well, Butch, I guess we better hit the hay. What do you say? What do you say, darling?
No, wait, Ernie, did I tell that counterman how I wanted my hamburger, sir? Did
I? Of course, dear.
What did I say? I can't seem to remember.
Huh. I forget to come along to bed.
No, no, I don't want to go to bed yet. Please don't make me go to bed. I'm scared.
Helen. Come to bed, darling. Like a good little girl. Hmm?
We went to bed. And then you said...
And now, lights out, eh?
I tried to think of everything I knew to keep awake. I wondered whether I ought to count to 100 or whether counting would put me to sleep. I tried not to count, but I felt myself getting sleepier and sleepier.
Asleep, honey?
I heard, but I pretended not to. I fought to keep my eyes open. I knew I would die if I closed them.
Asleep, Butch?
I didn't answer. I couldn't if I wanted to. I was so scared. And then pretty soon I heard you stirring ever so quietly. And in a moment you were leaning over me. Oh, Ernie, I know it was just a dream, but it was so real. And there was hatred in your eyes, and there was a pillow in your hand, and I knew you were going to do it right then, and I...
Oh, 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 that's a beaut, that's a honey. Oh, my aching back. Darling, when you have a nightmare, you sure do it up golden brown and creepy.
Wasn't it crazy? Oh, darling, wasn't it mad?
Oh, wait till I tell it around the office tomorrow. Oh, this is too good, dear.
But, Ernie, how does a person have a horrible dream like that? What does it mean?
Oh, it's a cinch. I'll interpret it for you, and without a dream book,
you
too.
You will? Well, go on then, Ernie, tell me.
Okay, then, here it is. First of all, a dream always means the opposite, right?
You ever hear that?
Yes, I have. That's right, it does.
Which means I must love you simply awful. Granted?
Granted, silly. But goodness, what about the rest of it?
Easiest thing in the world. Darling, where'd we go tonight?
To a movie.
What kind of a movie?
It was a murder story. Gee, that's right. Do you think that was...
Now, don't interrupt, Butch. Who was starring in the movie?
Betty Davis.
Repeat the first name.
Betty.
And the villainess in the dream, my secret love, the girl we met last summer, was also Betty. Betty Daniels.
Oh!
Well, that gave you Betty on the brain when you went to sleep tonight, and movies and murder, and those hamburgers you did stop to eat after the show wrapped up the whole sequence. And no wonder. They're still lying on my stomach, too.
Well, what was the pillow doing in it?
Sweetness and light, what were you talking about early this evening? That chore you intend to get after someday?
Oh, yes, I've got to stuff the pillows. They're caved in the way the feathers have come out.
Right, that's your pillow you had on the brain, which brings me back to the hamburgers.
Yes, I was going to ask you, I mean, that nonsense of how did I want my hamburgers, what did all that mean, for heaven's sake?
Precious, how did you order your hamburgers done tonight, remember?
No, I can't recall.
Oh, of course you can. Think now. How do you almost always order your hamburgers?
Smothered in onions. Oh, Ernie, of course. Smothered in onions. Smother, pillow, smother with a pillow.
Check.
Oh, my heaven's sakes alive. Oh, my gosh. So that was it. Oh, if that doesn't beat... Ernie, that was wonderful. Really. The way you did that, figured that all out. I think you'd make a terrific detective.
So I'm a police reporter. Close enough.
Darling... It's made me think, though, but maybe I have been a little bit selfish.
What do you mean?
Well, that book you always wanted to write. Maybe I ought to let you give up your job and try.
Oh, and have us both starve? Nuts. Anyway, in my sane moments, Helen, I've always known the truth. I'm no writer. If I had it in me, it would have come out of me, job or no job.
I could go back to work again, you know. I could take up nursing again. It was pretty hard,
no,
but
no, no, nonsense. I won't have it. I won't say any more about it, and that's fine. You're a swell guy, though, Butch, to offer to.
Oh, there was one thing more, Ernie.
Hmm? Yes?
What do you suppose that was all that about July 15th, about your forgetting July 15th? What did that mean, you know?
Yes. Don't you?
No, I can't. It does seem familiar, but I can't seem to... Where are you going?
Get something out of my wallet. Wait a minute. What's the date of our anniversary, Helen?
Hmm? July 15th, of course. Tomorrow. What was that?
Right. You've had that on the brain, too.
Oh.
Here. Little present for you, darling.
Oh, what on earth? Tickets. Two railroad tickets to Montreal.
Right again. We're taking an anniversary trip. I wanted to surprise you when you woke up, but... anyway, happy anniversary, baby.
Oh, Ernie. Oh, you great big precious darling. How can I ever... You didn't forget. You always did before, but this time you didn't. Oh, Ernie, I just can't stand it. First that dream, and then finding out that it did mean just the opposite.
No, Helen, don't.
It's so sweet of you. I'm so thrilled. Montreal, where we had our honeymoon, and you haven't forgotten. Oh, Ernie, I do hope I've been a good wife to you. And if there's anything I ever... I mean, if you want me to, I can always change.
Oh, darling, I wouldn't want you any different for the world. I want you to stay just the same sweet little girl I married. And now, let's get some shut-eye, huh? Lights out?
All right. And I'm going to put the tickets right here under the pillow. And have a happy dream for a change.
Ah. Good night, Butch.
You haven't kissed me? Good night, dear.
Sleep, darling. Darling, are you asleep? Hello?
Ernie?
You shouldn't have phoned before, Betty. She was still awake.
I had to know. Is it done?
Not yet.
You got the tickets?
Yes.
It has to be tonight. You promised.
I know.
Is she asleep now?
Yes. Just gone off.
Then what are you waiting for?
Nothing. I'll do it now. Right now. As soon as I hang up.
Putting down the phone, Ernie turns and picks the pillow off his bed as the clock finishes striking 12.
Murder at midnight.
Remember to be with us again when death appears out of the darkness, wearing the face of one you know, and the clocks strike 12 for
murder at midnight.
The part of Helen was played by Elspeth Eric. Walter Vaughn was Ernie. With music by Charles Paul, Murder at Midnight was directed by Anton M. Leder.
And Lisa thought I had a lisp. It's Elspeth.
Oh, I know Elspeth, Eric. It just
Elspeth.
It just, when you said it, sounded like a little thing. Elspeth. Sounded like a little speech impediment.
That happens sometimes.
Which is really good for radio.
June 7th, 1946. Murder at mid. I could have done the voice for that. Ready?
Go ahead.
Okay. Murder at midnight.
You're trying to sound like Roger, that's all.
All right, murder. So that's called Nightmare, and that starred Elspeth Eric, also Walter Vaughn, as heard on KFI Los Angeles. Let's take a quick break, then it's more on the WGN Radio Theater. All right, when Lisa and I and Shante come back here tonight.
Don't do any math.
I'm not going to do, you're right, David. I'm not going to do the math.
All right.
But when we come back here, I'm playing my favorite classic radio series, Boston Blackie.
Really?
Love Boston Blackie. Just, I don't know why, I just do. I think he's just great.
Just great stories.
Yeah, I tape all the Columbia pictures that are on Turner all the time with Chester Morris. So Chester Morris, who, you know what, Dave, you may know this or maybe you don't know this. Did you know that Kent Morris.
That's easier for you to say.
Wait, Kent Morris. There was a man here years ago, Kenton Morris.
At GN?
At GN. A bigwig at GN years ago. It was his son. Chester
really?
Morris's son.
Really?
Yes.
Stayed in the radio business.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
And but of course, Chester Morris played Boston Blackie in the movies. He did play it for a summer season on radio, but then Dick Calmar played it on radio. But do you remember who played him on television? Kent Taylor. Kent Taylor played him on television.
Wow, cool.
He had a pencil mustache.
Yeah, love that.
Then we have Life with a Luigi tomorrow. That's for my mom. Nice. She loves that.
Nice.
And then we have a good newspaper drama, The Big Story.
Oh.
So, Lisa, are you going to be able to
call it The Big Story here.
Yeah.
Everything's a big story around here.
Yeah.
Is your driver, with your convertible Bentley, going to be able to get you here tomorrow?
Yeah, I'll think about it.
Okay. Because, you know, earlier...
See how my day goes. Yeah.
She said, do you have any snack... Earlier, this is how rich Lisa is. A little earlier...
I saw that chocolate cake on her Facebook page.
Is that gorgeous?
Yeah.
I know.
Where was that?
Somebody made it.
Wow.
Somebody made it?
That was crazy.
I know.
Yeah.
I mean, it wasn't me. I wish I could take
it. It looked amazing. No, it looked amazing.
I know. It's
you
beautiful.
Ready for this? This is how pampered Lisa is.
Mm-hmm.
She says to me earlier, do you have any snacks? I said, yeah, I brought two hard-boiled eggs. And she's like, You have the shells are on those. You know, you can buy hard-boiled eggs that are already cooked that don't have the shell on them.
Yeah. Yeah, you can. A bag of them, actually.
Well, I bought a bag for my daughter sometimes. So
yeah,
you can bring them to
buy
school
it for my
and
son.
Stuff.
Same thing.
See, I can't afford to do that.
He's like, well, it's just for ease, you know, for the kids.
I'm the old-fashioned way. I take the raw egg, I put it in, I boil them.
Yeah.
Time it,
yeah.
You know.
Oh, I get all that, yeah.
And then and that's it. But I don't
get all that.
Yeah.
I've heard of that.
She buys
that sounds
her
fun.
She buys her hard-boiled eggs already boiled and already
actually
shelled.
I actually don't eat hard-boiled eggs.
Is it called de-shell, or what do you call it?
I don't know. Do you color them?
At Easter time, I do. Okay, yeah. So Dave Plyer's here, and his show is up next.
Mm-hmm.
And do you have who I think you have?
Paul Schaefer.
I got Paul Schaefer, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, pretty
Paul
cool.
Schaefer.
Very
fantastic.
Cool.
Trying to talk to him for the last few years, and it's just been hard to get to, and he's got a new album out with the world's most dangerous band. So he's gotten Letterman's
Very
whole
cool.
band together.
Wow.
And I know I saw in a Rolling Stone magazine article he still has lunch or dinner with Dave every couple weeks, which surprised me. Because Carson, and Dave is a lot like Carson, he's kind of one of those guys that are on when they're on the air and off air, not very social.
Mm.
And Johnny just kind of disappeared. I don't think Johnny and Ed saw each other much at all after
he
went off the air. So Dave and him get together every couple weeks. Wow. So, yeah, really looking forward to talking to Schaefer.
Isn't David a big traveler? Because I've seen him talk. He always seems like he's in somewhere else.
He has, like, only a couple places he goes, exotic, and I can't remember what it was.
Yeah.
But he goes there often. But he's in town a lot. And one of the things I asked him in advance of the conversation, I said, what do you think of that beard?
Oh,
and he said, you know
something?
What? He goes, the more people talk about it and hate it, the bigger it's going to get.
That's right. That's you know? That's how it is.
Yeah.